Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Olivier Collin.
When you run, you feel like it's something you take for granted. And going through the injuries over the years, I think I realized that, you know, running is just kind of, it's always like, almost like a meditative tool and kind of creates that balance in my life. I know that when I'm just kind of feeling a little more stressed, a little more anxious about any situation or a little, you know, just down, I know that I can rely on running to kind of give me that back or give me that extra boost of motivation or extra energy throughout my day.
On this episode of The Rundown, I discuss group running, the November Project, and the Speed Project with Laurent Cordelier. After trying to make it in the big city of Toronto, it was apparent to him there was very little work-life balance. That's why he moved back to Montreal and rediscovered himself just 2 years ago. Now he's a community leader, joining different run groups on a weekly basis, supporting other people's goals, and co-leading the November Project every Wednesday morning in the Old Port at 6:29 a.m. It sounds like that was a life changer for Laurent, so hopefully it could help you too. This episode of The Rundown is proud to be sponsored by eloendurance.ca, your one-stop online shop for all your nutrition needs. Training for a marathon is not only tough on the body, but it's time-consuming as well. I know personally, I'm constantly juggling my runs with work, family, and friends. The one thing that always seems to take a backseat is my on-course nutrition. I'm always rushing to the store the day before my race to grab gels and settle for whatever flavors are still in stock. eloendurance.ca makes ordering your favorite gels, chews, and hydration mixes simple and easy. They're a small family-run business that understands the needs of endurance athletes and loves staying connected with this growing community. With the ability to mix and match your favorite flavors at bulk pricing and quick shipping right to your door across Canada, eloendurance.ca can help keep up with the pace of your busy schedule. To help make them your new favorite nutrition supplier, eloendurance.ca has generously offered all the Rundown listeners 15% off your next order. Just type in the promo code LORUNDOWN15 at checkout and let eloendurance.ca help fuel your next run, ride, or hike. In this week's news, I'd like to give you a little race recap from New York. November 3rd marked the 49th anniversary of the New York City Marathon, a race in which I was very lucky to be a part of. After racing Boston for the last 3 years, I was excited to race a new course and test myself on the streets of New York. The city and the race definitely lived up to the hype, with supporters and loud cheers right across the five boroughs. Starting on Staten Island, into Brooklyn, through Queens, up to the Bronx, and back down to Manhattan, ending in Central Park. The course was perfect, as was the temperature. The most challenging parts of the course were the long spread out bridges, especially Queensboro Bridge. During our shakeout, the legendary Meb had told me that that's where the race really starts. And sure enough, it was particularly tough for me. I felt great, but my body started breaking down around 32K. I sensed the cramp in my left hamstring and then on my right. At that point, it's a fine line between maintaining speed and potentially making a cramp worse. I'd been drinking water every aid station, but started to opt for Gatorade in order to get more electrolytes in my system. Fortunately, the cramps didn't get any worse, and I was able to continue running towards the finish. I completed my first New York City marathon with a time of 2 hours, 51 minutes, and 56 seconds. Not my best marathon by any means, but my best performance at a world major to date. I'm blessed to have had the opportunity and hope to have my shot at the Berlin or Chicago marathon next year. Fingers crossed. One of the most interesting stories of the day was a sub-elite runner who ran his way onto the podium. Girma Bekele Gerbre had no sponsors and no agent, running for himself. Finishing an incredible 2 hour, 8 minute, and 38 second race, which was only 25 seconds behind the winner. Honestly, that's something I love about these events. It's the same course and the same distance whether you're an elite or in the last corral. Everyone runs the same race, and sometimes there's a surprise at the finish. Gebre is originally from Ethiopia, but spends a lot of his time training in New York with the West Side Runners. It's a club that has hundreds of strong, working-class, often immigrant runners that began out of the West Side YMCA 42 years ago. The lead of the club attributed Gebre's breakthrough performance to the fact that he had trained in Ethiopia for the past few months. Looks like the altitude training took his performance to the next level. He took home $55,000 US for his third place finish. Maybe we'll see him with a sponsor in his next race. He clearly belongs on the starting line with the top elites. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. Being part of the Montreal Run community, you see a lot of faces every week on a regular basis. My next guest is one of those faces. I see him at WOG Run Club, at Yamadrill Run Club. He leads November Project as well on a weekly, every Wednesday morning. We'll get into all that. I'd like to welcome to the show, Laurent Caudrelier. How did I do there?
That was pretty good.
Yeah, tried my best. Welcome, Laurent. Thanks for joining me today. It's been a long time coming. I think I've been trying to get you on the show for a little while now, but it seems to be a quiet time.
And I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks for coming in. Laurent, I want to get started. You're not from Montreal originally. You're from Europe, from France, I believe. Can you get into where you're from and what your childhood was like?
Mm-hmm. I moved a bit when I was a kid, but I think Montreal now is my home. At least it's been for the last 2.5 years. I was born in France, but I moved to Canada when I was 5 years old. First to Toronto, we moved back to France for a bit, then Montreal. So I grew up actually in Montreal, like most of my teenage years, but then went to Toronto to do my master's and for work, and only came back 2 years ago. And basically rediscovering Montreal. Montreal is very different when you're not a broke student who's trying to pass all his exams. And it's actually a very fun city in many ways, like both the people, the culture, but also all the sporting community, both the running and the activities. There's so much happening here. And I guess Toronto does not offer the same thing. So, now more and more I'm feeling like Montreal is my home.
Nice. And was that always the plan to come back to Canada or...?
I was a young kid when my parents moved over, the first time. So as I said, I was 5, and the second time I was 12. So basically that's the age when you just follow around and don't really ask questions. But coming back to Montreal at first, no, not necessarily. It wasn't really the plan. I thought I'd be in Toronto for a long time. I had, bought a condo there, working my life off. And if anything, that's because I was so focused on working and making it in the big city that, I realized I was not going in the right direction, life-wise, and coming back to Montreal was in a way like to refocus on who I really was and what I wanted to become.
Hmm. What made you realize that? Was there something that stands out?
I used to work as a strategy consultant, and then in private equity, which for a normal person means I was working all the time. I remember my ex-girlfriend and I at the time, we used to have an activity which was basically, hey, on Saturday we go work in my office, on Sunday we go work in your office. Such a fun activity. You knew basically from Monday to Friday, you could not make plans with anyone. You'd be in the office close to midnight every day, if not later. And on the weekends, you'd probably have to catch up some work that you didn't have time to do. And if you had free time, you just wanted to stay home and do nothing at all. Not eat out and just cook and eat like just pasta with butter. Mm. And you do this for a couple of years and it just wears you down. I remember back then I was so proud if ever I got a 5K run in my week. That was like a big achievement. And I would always run around the Parliament in Toronto, Queen's Park, which was a 800 meter loop. I would do as many times as I could before I had to go back home, shower and go to work. it was a very, very different life. And you do this for years and years, it just wears you down and you just don't realize how deep you've gone until something knocks you out of it. Mm-hmm. It was both like a mix of like a bit of a burnout, like people around me, like really like kind of losing it a bit that made me realize, okay, I need to get myself out of this. And I tried a bit in Montreal, like working more and like in the finance industry and like in a big company again. And that was just not for me anymore. I tried in a different context, which was theoretically more relaxed. But I just realized, no, there's in that industry in particular, if you're working, you're working all the time. And that was not who I wanted to be. So
what are you doing now?
Now, I continue to work for some of the companies I used to have, like, to be responsible for, actually, as sort of like the manager, assistant to the CEO. But I work more as a contractor base, so I can control my schedule, take contracts on things that I feel like I'm actually interested in doing, and versus just trying to do everything. And just being able to, again, manage my schedule so I can focus on more about me and not just like working all the time is much better. I mean, I don't know. Again, I've been saying this for a while. Like, it's time for me to probably find a more stable job where I actually work with other people than just myself. But for the time being, it's quite a challenging activity to be your own boss. But also, that flexibility is so appealing that it's hard to give it up.
That's why you could join us here this afternoon.
Exactly.
And you're around people all the time, so.
True. And it's, in a way, it's like much more interesting people than the people worried more about how fake their wallet is and not really anything else.
That's it. So what was it growing up as a kid? Were you active as a kid? Was running always part of it, or was it something else?
No, not at all, actually. In my family, probably no one really does sports. Even to this day, like when my sisters, I have three sisters and a brother, and it didn't, like... And, you know, for them, oh, if they go for a half an hour walk on the weekend, that's for them, it's like, oh, a very active day today, which is, you know, not to discriminate walking. It's if you follow actually the World Health Organization, that's a great activity to do. But it's not the same as someone who goes for like runs or like, you know, even a marathon, even running a 5K. It's completely different. Mm. No, definitely not a active family. For me, it was more actually when I was quite young. I think when I was like 12 or 13, I started doing karate just because it was like there was an ad in the mailbox because yeah, those were a thing back then, and I joined and I really really loved it. So I started training three times a week as a kid, and there I met some of my good friends, and one of them one summer told me, hey, I want to lose some weight, so like, you know, I want to start running. And we had never ran before, and so we're like, yeah, sure, you know what, like, let's start running. You know, we were like these like 15 year old kids who didn't really know what they were doing. I remember I was gone for a month, and actually when I came back and I saw him, like, geez, like, what happened, bro? Like, where are you?
Yeah,
can't see you anymore. So it was really great, and that's how we started running. But when I started university, both because I needed to pay for everything and all, like I running like became more of a, like a side thing, and more over time, it kind of like I lost track of it. Similarly, actually, having grown up in the Alps as a kid, we would see the Tour de France every year because we were right next to one of the typical end villages and were next to some of the big climbs that the Tour de France goes to still to this day. And so every year we would see the tour. And for anyone who's attended, you know, like the like caravan and like all the cyclists, it's such a crazy atmosphere just to be there, and even watching the tour on TV. So like I always loved cycling, and I remember my first job was both working as a janitor all day, and then at night being a soccer referee, and I spent all my money on a bike, which got stolen 2 months later.
Oh, no.
But thanks to insurances, I got a better one. And that's when I started cycling. And I did competitive cycling for 2 years when I was in CGIP. But I didn't like that community, which is a lot about money and being able to buy better gear and just showing off. And actually, the races were quite aggressive. People were like very pushy in the turns. And when it's wet and windy and you're about to fall all the time, you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I kind of gave up running, gave up cycling with university, just did it, you know, when I had a bit of free time. And it was really when I came back to Montreal, I'm like, you know, this used to be something I loved to do and I haven't done it in years. And so now, you know, just like picking it back up. And actually, I had a friend in Seattle who told me, hey, why don't you join November Project? And I didn't know what it was. And he's like, you know, I don't know anyone in Montreal. He's like, no, like, go, like, they'll welcome everyone. You don't need to do anything. And he told me about it. And for about like 3 or 4 months, I looked at it on Instagram and or on Facebook, and I never joined. I'm like, I'm not a guy who can do push-ups. I can do 2 or 3. And then I'm like, I'm tired. And even sit-ups, I do like 10. And I just don't, you know, I'm just not that guy to do this type of thing. But, you know, he kept on telling me, no, like, really, trust me, everyone's welcome there. Like, you don't have to do a single thing, and no one really cares. And And after a while, like, I finally gave in, and I, what we say, like, we just show up. And yeah, you realize no one gives a damn about what you can cannot do. There, everyone's like just cheerful about you being able to just be there. And that's when I realized I love this. And 2 weeks later, I met people of the Yamajo Run group. And that was another thing that was a big change in my life. And so both November Project and Yamajo have been such a big part of my life here in Montreal since I've been back. And it's, a true blessing to be part of like these two groups and also all the other all the other people of the run community, including yourself, that I've met since.
Mm-hmm. And when you brought running back in, what were some of the things that you experienced? Was it, would you have some challenges at the start? And like, how often would you go, and what kind of distances would you do?
At first, it was I was maybe gradual in how I brought it back in for maybe 2-3 weeks. But then I was just, I had just stopped working again, my 80-90 hour weeks, and so I was just really worried about me not having to do anything all day. Because it used to be one of these things where you would wake up in the morning, check all the emails you had not looked at, since you went to bed, having to answer them before you even got your first coffee, and then just trying to rush to go to work and just work until you basically couldn't do it anymore and just go to bed. And suddenly you wake up and you're like, oh, I actually have time to do something. So why don't I go for a run? And very quickly, I think I went from running maybe my 5K a week to being close to 60, 70, even 80. And so I was quite lucky at first to not feel any of the consequences of this. I wouldn't say I was focusing on speed back then. It was just like, I was just happy to be on the road and just putting one foot in front of the other. And if anything, I met incredible people in both these groups who convinced me, hey, like, you should try doing a race. It's really fun too. And I had done one half marathon once in my life, again, with my friends when we were like 16 or 17. I remember one of them called me around 1 p.m., say, hey, why don't we run a half marathon in an hour? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Because, you're a kid. You don't really know what you're doing. Yeah. And we just ran our little loop that we used to do that was 10 kilometers long twice. And then we did a little bit more. I'm just like, must be around 21K. We're so tired. And I remember we dragged ourselves to like a dépanneur that was close by just so we can get ourselves a Gatorade. And we're like, oh, okay, this is, we should do it again. And we obviously never did. but it was
and it
like,
didn't take an hour.
It took 2.5 hours. Yeah. But that was a great and fun experience. But so when Christina from Yamajo told me, hey, like, you should definitely race, and I'm doing this marathon in like a couple months, you should definitely do it too. And I remember back then I had, again, just met the people in January, and they were all like going through this thing called the January battle, where you try to run 400 kilometers in 31 days. And Christina had just crossed that 400 kilometer mark. And so for me, she was like an idol. I'm like, wow, like running that distance is crazy. Like, because I was still in the habit of maybe 5K a week. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't even believe it. Having her tell me, hey, you could definitely run a marathon, like you should definitely do it. And me and my friend were doing it at the end of April. You should sign up. And, it was kind of like, it's a nice challenge. I should definitely try. And one thing led to the next. A couple of months later, I was running that first marathon with no expectations whatsoever. I was just coming back from a trip in South America. I had landed the night before the race. And I'm like, okay, if I just can finish this at whatever speed, even if I have to walk it, I don't care. That's going to be awesome. And, I started running. But I guess, having been in Peru and Bolivia for the last 2 months, the altitude effect was really like in my benefit.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh, this is actually quite easy. Again, and I had tapered for basically 2 months. So so that actually went very well. And about at the 32 kilometer mark, Pierre, which was your first guest here, was there in his raccoon suit. And he's like, hey, I'll drag you back to the end. He's like, hey, you know, what's your name again? Like, we didn't really know each other.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait, is that your first marathon? You're kidding. He's like, no, like, I don't really know what I'm doing. He's like, okay, I'm just trying to keep this pace. And I didn't have a watch back then, or like, I was basically one of these tourists who didn't know what they were doing. It's like, yeah, I'll pace you. And he basically brought me all the way into the finish line much faster than what I had told him.
Wow.
And, you know, that was an amazing feeling. And that's when I realized, okay, maybe I'm really enjoying this. I should do more of these races.
Continue. And he was wearing the raccoon suit because that's the logo of Yamajo, for anybody that doesn't know. So I just want to clear that up. He just wasn't on the sideline in a raccoon suit. That's the power of these run groups, crews, clubs, whatever you want to call them. It's the power of like running with people and just being with people and getting motivated like on a weekly, just to go out, just to, because you have accountability, you show up. And that's one thing I really liked about the group running, as did you. But you said that you watched the NP Instagram for a while before you joined. I think that's a lot of something people face a lot when they see it from the outside. They stalk a little bit before, but there's always this reserve and to join and sign up. Like, what made you go for it? And looking back, were you like, why did I wait so long?
Definitely. Why did I wait so long? Also, why didn't I go when I was in Toronto? That could have been such a fun thing to do too.
Yeah.
And actually that one friend, who's a very, very good friend of mine, actually had stayed over at my place when I lived in Toronto and actually woke up on Wednesday morning to go to the Toronto workout. And I'm like, oh, you're crazy. Who does this? I'm never going to do this. And here I am a couple years later. So it's quite funny to see how things turned out. But definitely on your point. In the running community, even here in Montreal, and I think of most of the run groups, there's maybe a few which welcome like the run walk runners, but it's often more or less expected that you can run at least a 5K distance, because that's usually the shortest distance that most of these run groups would offer, even if there's breaks in the middle. But it's sometimes hard for us that have been running for, you know, a while now, or in our positions, that, you know, not everyone can still do this. And if anything, November Project is a bit this weird beast that actually, it doesn't matter if you can run or not, because it's not we're not actually about running. We're not actually so much about working out. It's more about just like being there in the morning and starting your day with the best feeling. And I mean, sports, you know, the endorphins you get from like just working out is awesome. So that helps definitely. But really, November Project is a thing where really everyone is welcome. And there's stories from all across these cities around the world where November Project is also. But, you know, people that, you know, were on the verge of committing suicide, or didn't know anyone in their city, who had just like lost their job and went through a breakup and like lost keeping their kids at home. And they basically, like, their life was in shambles. And, you know, they just, someone tells them, but you should come. And they finally just show up, and they had like the best time. There's stories also after the bombing in Boston, where people just, I think that like at least 500 or 600 people showed up to the workout on Wednesday after the bombings in Boston, because they needed a place to be. And you know how the amazing feeling of just being there and getting a hug that morning, and knowing that your sort of like November Project family would be there for you. I think that's what NP really offers. It's, yeah, there's a workout component to it, but before everything else, it's a big community where really everyone is welcomed.
Can you explain a bit what it is exactly?
Yeah, true. So it's a free fitness movement who started in Boston. I probably should have started by this now that I think about it. It's a free fitness movement who started in Boston in 2011. It was two guys who had just graduated from Northeastern University. And they used to row a lot in university, in college. We're like, hey, now, you know, we can't afford a gym, so we'll just work out outside. And they did it by themselves sort of in the summer. And then November came along, and November in like Northeast North America, it gets a little chilly. It's, you know, it's wet. It's not really welcoming. It's dark out. And so they started a Google Doc called the November Project, that the two of them would work out on the morning of like a couple morning of that month. And so the first one, there was only the two of them. And they told that one of their buddies about it. Say, hey, sure, I'll come. You know, we'll walk the stadium stairs in Harvard. Just run up the stairs for half an hour. And so then there were three. And the following week, like, you know, a couple of their friends showed up, and they were a smaller group. And the week after, even bigger. and so on and so forth. And then December came along and said, hey, you know, this is fun. We should continue doing this. And people are enjoying it. It's starting to become something. And, you know, December came along, then January, then, you know, in February, and it just went on and on. And just the movement grew of offering free workouts for their friends and, you know, their friends of friends and friends of friends and friends. But the Google Doc never changed name. It was always called the November Project. So that's where the name came from, even though it happens all year round, the November Project name stuck along. And some of these people from Boston moved like to other cities and say, hey, can we start this thing elsewhere? And so it started expanding to San Francisco. Then I think it went to Canada and Edmonton very quickly. Edmonton was the fourth city to start. And so the Edmonton group is now one of the biggest groups in the November Project family. And, you know, one thing led to the other. Eight years later now, almost 8 years now, and actually November. Mm-hmm. November Project is in 52 cities across 9 countries.
Wow.
And everywhere you go, you just show up to the workout and you are sure to be welcomed by the same crazy folks who are there to yell crazy things at 6:30 in the morning, get a great workout, cheer you as much as, you know, as much as they can, and then your day goes on. Mm-hmm. And because it's that weird hour of the day where you can just be a little silly, and like no one really cares, no one's really up,
no one's awake.
Exactly. So that's your hour for you, you know, no matter what your day has for you afterwards, and you never know, things can go one way or the other. Like that hour's for you, and you can just have the best time, just be as weird or silly or unique or active as you want. And, you know, you look at the global community of November Project, there's ex-Olympic athletes, you know, 100-miler runners, but there's also like these, like, you know, what we call recent couch potatoes, people who have never done it, like anything, and just they needed a reason to work out. And a gym is kind of scary, there's all these people judging you. No one judges you as November Project. No one, you know, really gives a damn what you can and cannot do. It's more, if you're there, you're there and you're already winning. And we make sure like that all our workouts are scalable, so that no matter where you are in that fitness spectrum, you will go home tired and sore, or not so much if you want to take it easy. But we guarantee that you can take it easy and have fun, or just be like sweaty and be sore for 5 days. And that's our offering. And it's always free. We don't ever charge for anything. As a matter of fact, the way we make shirts is we spray paint November Project with stencils, which we call the grassroots gear.
They're actually quite nice.
Exactly. So you bring your own shirt, like a new one, an old one, and, you know, just a couple of a splash of spray paint later, you have a November Project shirt.
Right. And I've been a few times too, and it is really nice. You don't even know you're working out, really. It's like way before the day started, and then you feel like you've accomplished something before you had to work before. So if you do nothing that day, at least you've accomplished that. Every Wednesday, 6:29, right?
So you know if we start on time.
Yeah. So it's been a big year for you, and you actually became a leader of November Project, which was big news. You were always there doing the workouts and stuff like that. How did that come about, and what did it mean to you?
It definitely meant a lot, because November Project has this little special place in my heart, because it was the first place where I showed up in a group setting. And the fact that it's so welcoming to everyone, because if anything, if I look at my life, especially looking back at it, it was really in shambles before I started doing all this. You know, I never went to see necessarily someone in particular, but I was probably in between like a depression and a burnout and a mix of probably other things too. And I just needed something to recenter everything so I could just start building something new. And November Project was that first brick. So for me, it was quite unique because of that. But also the way November Project works is it's, you know, old leadership. It's, you know, that the fact that you probably started it or led it for 5 years doesn't mean much. It's just like, it's great. It's amazing. But it's also, as leaders, we try to be humble about the fact that, you know, our time sometimes is up, and, you know, there's new energy in the group. And because of this, there's sort of like this unwritten rule in the November Project guidelines that you only have 2 leaders per city. Some bigger cities who have like 4 or 5 workouts a week will probably have more just because of the logistics needed behind this. But the idea is it's really only 2 liters at a time in a city. And so when you can take care of it because your life changes or just because you don't have time anymore or just because you know, like you've been doing this for a couple of years and your energy and motivation is just not as at a peak as someone else in your group. It's when, you know, it's realized time, hey, why don't I give someone else this opportunity to lead? And that's when, you know, that's actually what sort of happened to me at the time. When I joined Mila and Derek, which actually started the group here in Montreal, had been leading it for a while, and both of them, for different reasons of both like work changing, had a harder time taking over. And so at first it was Lauren and myself who took care of it. But Lauren was she is an inspiration in herself in how she basically took this group and brought it to new heights. And really, in a way, like really started the November Pride Montreal 2.0 of like, you know, what we are becoming.
Just a real great energy.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Montreal misses her.
Yeah, definitely.
But I was also very lucky to have Dora become a new co-leader when Lauren had to move back to Edmonton. And Dora is also absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah. And an amazing athlete, too. A great runner. She just ran Chicago.
Exactly. With a sprained ankle.
Yeah.
Fell through halfway through the race, like with bloody knees, made it through the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
Not her PB, and we'll forgive her. Still a Boston qualifying time, right. But you know, just like that's Dora in a nutshell.
Yeah,
always smiling, super happy. No, she's incredible, and she brings such amazing energy to the group. And she's also a great partner to be with because I think we both have different leadership styles. She's a little quieter. I'm still an introvert, but I'm just on 6:29 on Wednesdays. I yell like a maniac.
You're on.
She's a bit quieter, but, we're definitely, I think we make a very good pair. But on that note of how in November Project leadership works, I'm, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, hey, you know, like is someone else in this group, would someone else in this group make an even better leader? And how can I empower them to just take on many tasks that is part of like organizing November Project, be it like organizing a group activity or taking care of some of our taking care of our Instagram or our Facebook group or so on, but also, you know, on the longer term, like, hey, would they want to take over actually as leaders? And you know, it's also in a way motivating to think that your role here is only temporary and that this will always continue. And you're just like one of the building blocks of this even bigger movement. Mm. And that's also, I mean, as much as it is, you know, like I like it, like it's very fun to lead, but it's also even more exciting to know that one day you can look back at it as like your little baby you contributed to.
Mm. Yeah. And it's not like, like Derek still shows up at the workouts and stuff like that.
Exactly.
It's very much a big family. And also like what I love about it is like, because it's in so many different cities, you can go run a race somewhere else and you're getting support from people. If you're wearing your shirt and they know you're a November Project person, like it's like you have family everywhere you go, right? So that's a really cool thing about it too. I'll get into so you taking over November Project happened around the same time as another exciting event that you took part in February, I believe, and it's the Speed Project with your other family, Yamajo. And this is something like I've been wanting to talk about with you for a while. So if you could explain what it is and kind of, you know, what your role was within that group, and because I know you had a big part in it, and kind of how that experience was for you.
Well, yeah, no, the Speed Project, if anything, actually, if I take a step back, I think what's incredible is when you meet people through these different communities, everyone shares a bit of their dream race. And I came in not really knowing much about running in general. So for me, it was a way to discover what these dream races were. And in a way, like even talking to you, talking about like running the major marathons, you know, even running Boston and just hearing your stories every time, seeing you running with that Tracksmith CLA cap, you know, with the banana, just like, you know, it's just like, it's very inspiring and motivating. And so I came in the Yamajo family roughly at the same time as one of the captains, David, had been thinking for a couple of years of trying to bring our group to the Speed Project. And so, you know, kind of his dream and being part of it was really amazing. So the Speed Project itself, it's an on-section race between the Santa Monica Pier in Los Angeles and the Welcome to the Fabulous Las Vegas sign in Las Vegas, 550 kilometers away. What it is, you just start at 4 a.m. On a Friday, and it's about how fast you can possibly get to that sign in Vegas by foot, with one runner at a time. So as a team, you take relays through the day, through the night, through the desert, through the streets of LA and Vegas, and you know, living through all the crazy environments and the incredible sights that there is in between the two. And so I was very lucky to go there with the Yamajo family. It was actually at the end of March, with a couple of people also supporting us, including Leslie from WRG, who might not have been the person we knew the most before the race, but actually as we went along and kind of lost our brain power from just being tired of running, became such a pillar of holding the team back together, mm-hmm. and like guiding us towards the end. So it was an incredible experience.
Very cool. And I know you did a lot of the planning and like mapping for routes and kind of the logistics behind it. Yes. Why was that your forte? How'd you get put into that?
Well, I really don't want to take credit for things I haven't done. I think we really try to split the task as much as possible. Yeah. In my case, maybe in part because of my, more background in doing simulations and model, like financial models. Back in my master's, I used to do mathematical simulations a lot. And so, the question came in is like, how do you best prepare like a team of 10 runners? And how do you divide the distance so that we can, get to Vegas as much as possible? And kind of like, even for everyone, we roughly had an idea. Well, if you take 550 kilometers and divide it by 10, it's not, it's, 55 kilometers per person. But then how do you divide that to make it as efficient as possible? It was, I guess, my love of Excel spreadsheets and just overall like appreciation of mathematics who led me to propose something, which we then used. So it was really trying to model for both like heat, elevation, altitude and elevation change, like slope of the route, like your estimated running pace on different distances to kind of gauge at what pace you'd be running. Reading a couple papers on how altitude affects like your speed, how tiredness and soreness in your muscles affect your speed and your overall capacity overall. Like, and actually looking at things like the Tour de France, which you have people running and cycling over multiple days and seeing how their overall performance goes down over that time. Try to gauge, what overall can we expect? And then how can we best divide our group so that everyone performs ideally? And the idea was to divide our group into three sub-teams that would one team active at any time. And that team would roughly be active for 2 hours to one, well, one, one and a half to 2 hours, 2 hours at the beginning, more 1.5 towards the end, and sometimes even 1 hour at the very, very end. Mm-hmm. And for that 1 hour, 2 hours, you were responsible for running your set distance. So you had a meeting point where you would meet the rest of the team and you could divided in whichever way you want, but I had sort of made recommendations that we would go, for maybe like a 4 kilometer run at first and a 3K and a 2K, and just like go down gradually as a teamlet. And as the days went on and the runs went back, your starting distances became smaller and smaller. Towards the end, we were just basically running 1 kilometer legs. And just going for about 7 or 8 1 kilometer leg with a roughly 8 minute break in between each one, mm-hmm. Before your team's time was up and you rotated the whole set. And just, a lot of this was also planning how much rest time people would have in between so they could, get an idea of when they could have time to sleep, when they should eat to have time to digest so they're not like digesting while running. And just having forecasts of time with like different like sensitivity analyses to make them just as prepared as it could be, knowing that there's like so many unknowns that obviously my model would break down as the day went on. So
yeah,
and I think in the end, you know, we beat my estimations by 4 hours. People were, I guess the adrenaline there was incredible, especially towards the end. Like there was a team catching up to us, and it was incredibly exciting. You know, you probably have like around 50, 60 kilometers in your legs, and there's this other team, you know, that's catching up to you, and that's you're giving your all out. I think I have my PB on like a 2 kilometer run I did at the very end. You know, on Strava, it's still indicated as my fastest, you know, like 2K ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, when even though you're tired, like the adrenaline really kicks in. And so we did amazing in the end, and we finished in 40 hours and 4 minutes. So
amazing. Yeah, that's really, really cool. And like you guys trained so hard through the winter for that too, which was, I've trained for Boston through the winter, and it's like not fun to go through, you know, like.
But I think what was really helpful in a way, going back to this idea, is that you might have objective as an individual, you know, like I'm sure there's some people listening to this podcast who probably run by themselves or who prefer the idea of like, you know, like I want to set my own schedule. But sometimes when you have these big objectives, something that seems unachievable, because let's be honest, when we were first told that we had to run 550 kilometers as a team, definitely sounds a little scary. Because you know you're not running at a 55 kilometer, like if you were to run in a 55 kilometer ultra, your pace would be extremely different as in something like the speed project. You're basically at your 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer race pace the whole time. So it's quite different. And so we were honestly very scared. And none of us really knew how to approach this. So we would receive trainings every week from one of the organizers of the Speed Project, who's actually a running coach. And these trainings were hard. Every week we'd look at the email, we would just like send messages to each other. It's like, is this for real? Like, are we seriously doing a 40K long run with like accelerations every 2 kilometers? It's like, yeah, that's the plan. And you know, but it's the middle of winter and it's snowing out. It's like, no, but that's what we're told to do. And if you were by yourself, I think there was a week when you would see what the guy would expect us to do, you would find excuses not to do it. But because we were a team, there was this sort of this accountability aspect for all of us. And we, you know, we really cheered ourselves on. And we, most of the time, if we could, we try to do them together, which is because that extra motivation would really help. And yes, it's, you know, it's hard to schedule, and you know, it's already taking so much of your life. You know, when you have all these long runs on your weekends, it's really little time for everything else. But that was a big motivation that really pushed us through, and we arrived in LA in such a great shape. I think none of us had ever even thought we'd be in such a capacity. We kind of joked around. We looked at our Garmin's VO2 max like estimation and our like race pace estimations. We're like, whoa, like, no, I can definitely not run this, but this is exciting. Mm-hmm. So that was an incredible feeling. And I think some of the guys in the team actually tried to go through the training once again as they were training for a marathon, just because it was that good of a training. Mm. So no, definitely just that was incredible.
What would you say is the biggest challenge that you faced during that 44 hours?
I think it's running is quite easy. Des Linden, which is an incredible runner, has this saying, it's just like left foot, right foot. And that's all it is. Just one foot in front of the other and just keep on doing it until you go to the finish line. So if anything, the easiest part of the Speed Project, especially after all this training, was running. And what became the hardest was finding time to eat, finding time to sleep, because you also had sort of like these untold duties to your team that was also being there. You know, when you were theoretically resting, you also had to prepare everything for the other guys who were going to run next. So, you know, driving the RV to the next stop, making sure, you know, the fuel levels is good so that you don't end up stranded in the middle of the desert, you know, making sure that we're good on food, like, you know, that we still had food for everyone. And giving people that were probably, you know, some of the people who are not in as much of a good shape because of old injuries or injuries, you know, and how could we best assist them? So like we made it easier for them. You know, if I felt good, then it was a bit of my duty to kind of like help them, you know, try to do a little bit more. So finding time to really just take a break was really hard. And I think, you know, we were so excited. I was like, oh, I usually never use Instagram for myself. I use it through November Project. I'm like, oh, this is the one time I'll use it. And I think I only probably spent a grand total of like 20 minutes on my phone over those 40 hours, just because there was always something happening. Either be it like, oh, we had to readjust the route because like there was a road closure. We got messages from other teams about things that were happening on the road, or like police that were here and there. And so in the end, there was always something to do, something to be worried about, someone to help, someone to, and, you know, Leslie to help with his cameras, with the drone, or Goff, who was our incredible photographer, who maybe needed help with his bike. And in the end, like, there's always something happening, and like, it goes so fast, and you're already in Vegas. And so one of my biggest regrets is not necessarily enjoying how incredible of an experience this was, and the in beautiful sights there is, especially on the second day as we crossed that valley. It was just beautiful. And like, you're looking at the pictures, you're like, oh, we were there. I didn't even have time to look. I was just busy putting, you know, one foot in front of the other. We're just like running around, making sure everything went well. So that was probably the hardest aspect. And when we got to Vegas, I think like taking a long shower and just like passing out in a bed. Oh, that felt amazing. Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting you say that, because I give that advice to a lot of people doing a race for the first time, or, you know, who have these big lofty expectations. And like my first Boston didn't go as I wanted it to. But one thing I made sure to do was to look around and to appreciate it, because I think that's like overlooked often. Like, so you focus on your training, you're focused on where you're gonna be and like the hype and all that stuff. And it's like, no, you gotta stop and like appreciate that, because you don't get your first one back. That's what I always say. But anyways, for next time, I'm sure you'll do it again.
If I do it again, which wouldn't be for a couple of years, I think, you know, it's one of these, it's exciting and you want to keep it, you know, keep the excitement, you know, for like unique experiences. If you do it too often, it kind of loses it in a bit. But if I do it again, it'd probably be to support a team. I think it's really exciting to run it, but it's also really exciting just to be I wouldn't call it a passenger, but like being a non-running participant.
Like a support.
Exactly. But I wouldn't even call it a support like duty, because you're really like, you're part of like the race, but you're not part of the running part of the race.
Right.
The wording, a non-running participant. And be it either for taking photos or videos, or just like, you know, making sure that people running are doing their best. I think that would be the most exciting.
Right. Would you say that that's one of your greatest accomplishments?
I don't know if it definitely one of the ones I'm the happiest about, because it just, as a group, it felt amazing to be there and to be part of this. But we had trained so hard. I remember getting to Vegas being so happy, but I'm like, geez, I actually have more in tank. Like I can go for longer. And, you know, not necessarily regretting not going faster, because it's hard to pace yourself. And I think it's one of these challenges when you run like your first race on a longer distance that you've never done. But it's so just on the physical aspect, probably not the hardest. You know, some of the challenges we've had, even like the 24-hour challenge in here at WRG with the partners at B52, it's been really like that in a way can be really challenging if you really push yourself to work out for this time. And it's hard, you know, and for me, even as accomplishment, I don't associate accomplishment with a bit of like hardship and, you know, suffering. But running and working out, especially with such great people around, is always such a pleasure. Even though it's really hard during the race and you're like you know, it's like very type two type of fun. You're like, why am I doing this? Why did I sign up for this? It's, you know, it's, you know, I'm not enjoying like being, feeling like I want to throw up every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But then you get to the finish line, you're like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I can't wait to do it again. You know, I find, I don't like if I like the word achievement in running, just because it's such a pleasure. And I'm a bit curious to see, you know, how the years to come, you know, again, surrounded by such great people, what I'll be inspired to do, and where it will lead me. And the same goes with November Project as well. You know, I'm like, it's such a proud to be, you know, a pride to be part of like leadership, and meeting incredible people. And, you know, if anything, it just gets me more excited to see what's to come. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's, hey, that's a good answer for a tough question, for sure. There's just too many good moments, I guess, you know, to pinpoint just one of them.
Exactly. I wouldn't want to choose.
You also had a good experience running out in Berlin. Mm-hmm. So was that was your first world major, was it?
It was, yeah.
Okay, awesome. So, I mean, like I said, a big year for you. So with the November Project and then TSP, and now you did the Berlin Marathon. What was that experience like?
Definitely there's a different vibe at a major compared to other more local races. And to me, probably the most amazing aspect is to know that, like, in the sub 3 hour pace, which is, you know, quite fast for a marathon. I mean, maybe not for some of the people that've been on this podcast, including yourself. but it's to see how many thousands of people are running at such incredible speed is absolutely incredible, because it makes it's basically you're just following a train, and it makes it almost easy. I remember running Montreal last year, and I don't know my overall ranking, but I remember especially the moment we left the half marathon runners to run the second half, you were by yourself on the road, and there was a couple people on the side cheering you every maybe 2 kilometers or so. But it was really a mental game of you by yourself, just trying to keep up your pace and just, again, left foot, right foot, and all the way to the end. But in Berlin, there's thousands of people on the side, and there's even more people on the road, you know, in front of you. And it's almost challenging for the first like 5, 6, 7 kilometers just to find your spot in such a big group. And if anything, it reminded me of cycling, where you're almost like using the elbows to just make your spot in the peloton, to make sure you're in the right position to race. So yeah, definitely it's funny to see that happening in running too. And, you know, I actually went to Berlin not expecting to beat any time in particular. Berlin is known to be an extremely fast track, and I can confirm it to anyone listening that if you want to run a really, really fast marathon, Berlin is definitely an incredible city for that. But I, again, wanted to appreciate the experience, the people, like the vibe. And it's quite something indeed. I was inspired by a couple of very wise people to appreciate your first major. It was incredible.
Amazing. And so the running culture in Europe versus Canada, is there a big difference, or are they similar in some regards?
I mean, again, I'm probably not the best person to say, because, you know, I've only ever raced mostly here in North America, and that was my first, well, actually my second marathon in Europe, because I did one 3 weeks before Berlin.
I want you to tell people about that one after.
I think it's people a little more pushy on the sides. I guess they're probably used to seeing cyclists, you know, being more aggressive as pelotons, since cycling is maybe not as big in North America. I think, you know, what was very welcoming to me is, like, you know, either through the November Project family or through BTG, so the sort of gathering of run groups from around the world, you realize that, you know, everyone does things a little differently. Obviously, you know, each country has their own little habits, and, you know, Germans have a very German way of approaching races. But, you know, in the end, in the grand scheme of things, we're all runners. And yeah, for the couple of people wanting to raise their PB, who are really trying to shave off a couple seconds, if that means they need to be a little pushy on the elbows, sure. But it's probably see this happening, you know, similarly in a big race, even here in North America, just because, you know, it, you know, placing yourself right in a group is important. As, you know, professional athletes racing towards, you know, to the bitter end, at the end of marathons, show us every year. But in the end, I think, you know, if you're not super aggressive on what time you're trying to do, I think it ties back a lot to the same thing. And if anything, because you're allowed to drink in the streets in Europe, it makes for that victory beer to be even better.
You're a really talented athlete, though, and you never seem too worried about time for some reason. Do you have a time goal that eventually you'd like to achieve?
After so many people telling me about Boston, I'd love to be able to one day run it. And I probably have to shave off, you know, another 5 minutes on my marathon time, or wait that I become older. We'll see, whichever comes first. But it's one of those things, like, you know, I think you probably know, like, a month or two out of your race, you know, just before, how you feel in your training leading up to it. And this summer, you know, I wasn't sure how I would approach Berlin because I knew it would be a very fast course. And around July, I remember, like, just being, like, sort of like a self-awareness check. I'm like, how do I really feel? And I'm like, you know, this year, this summer, I don't really feel like I want to push myself through all the training necessary for me to go shave off those 5 minutes just yet. I'd rather go to Berlin, have an amazing time, and actually look forward to the next race versus, you know, still trying to go through it all. Maybe, you know, maybe you get my goal, but then, you know, coming out of it like disappointed or just being, you know, aching from every corner of my body and just like not looking forward to what would be coming next. And if running is this like pastime that you have that is, you know, that is so important to your well-being, then in a way, you know, there's going to be days where you want to race and go for your PBs and have the best time, like literally best time. But there's also days you want to have the best time at the race and just be like, you know what, I'll run what I run and it doesn't really matter because I'm going to come out of this happy. And, you know, different people approach this differently, but I'm more the type of guy who will sign up to races very late. Because I kind of like had, I put them in my calendar as like holds. I'm like, oh, like, you know, the Ottawa Marathon's coming up. But I look at how prices increases. Like they do publish how, you know, the prices, when the prices will go up. And I'm like, okay, well, until like the prices go up, you know, in February and then up until like the week before the race, they don't actually change. So, you know, if I don't know if I want to race it in February for sure, then I'll wait until like the week before and I'll train for it. And depending how I feel, I'll decide. You know, and so that if I go, I'm going to have, you know, be there because I really want to race it. Or, and if I don't, you know what, I'll just go cheer my friends who are already there or running it. So I'm more the type of guy, like, you know, put races in your calendar, train for them. And, you know, depending on how you feel, go run the one that you want. And in the end, keep it a pleasure. If it's no longer fun, then you're probably pushing a little too hard.
Or doing it for the wrong reasons, right?
Exactly.
And you had also, I mean, you talk about Berlin, but you had just run a marathon a week or two prior to that. Can you tell me, I know you told me already, but for anybody listening, what that race was all about and kind of how you got there. And it's all about fun with you, Laurent.
that race in particular, it was all about fun. So for those so it's called the Marathon du Médoc, and it's commonly referred to as the Wine Marathon. And so it takes place just outside of Bordeaux in France, being, you know, the best wine of the best, you know, the best wine region of what would some call the best wine in the world. Yeah, depending. I'm not actually a big wine drinker, but you definitely hear that, you know, French wine's not too bad. And the way the race works is you have to wear a costume. There's a theme every year, and you actually should be on theme because everyone is on theme. So you wear a costume, you know, but you can that you can still run because the race is still a 42.2-kilometer race. And you actually cross 65 different chateaus, with each one of them having a huge table with wine you can sample and more food that you can eat. But we're talking not race food, like, you know, roasted pork and foie gras and oysters and sirloin and, like, you know, like all the fruits and candies and French pastries you can think of. It never felt like a race. It just felt like an outdoors party with music, orchestras, costumes everywhere, and just plenty of booze. So the first 5K have no station, just to let everyone spread out. And then it's every kilometer, or if not half kilometer, that there's a wine station, to which I would recommend stopping at every single one of them and testing their wine, because it's absolutely delicious. And everyone on the course is so chatty, because, you know, no one really cares. It's, come on, you're running, there's wine everywhere. Who's, like, there's a couple, like, there's going to be 10 people in the front racing it, and everyone else is like, oh, whatever. So there's a great sort of, like, party ambiance happening. It's extremely international. They give you a little paper when you get to the race, and I think there was 155 countries represented at the race itself. From really all around the world. And there's only 10,000 participants, and it sells out, I think, in 2 hours when registration opens. So it is actually quite hard to get to. But everyone that you meet there, I think one of the first questions they ask you, it's like, oh, like, how many times have you done it before? Because it's sort of expected that you would come back every year. And I have to say, if I lived closer by, I would definitely go back every year. Yeah. That was definitely one of the most fun races I've ever done, and I would highly recommend it to anyone whoever wants to run a marathon but doesn't really want to run a marathon, because the distance is there and you can definitely claim your medal and say you've done it, but it's honestly the best marathon you could ever do for that. Mm-hmm. It will never feel like a race.
And you actually get a little something extra if you finish the race, right?
Yeah, so if you, well, I think for everyone crossing the finish line, you get a celebratory bottle of wine in case you haven't had enough. And there's also an all-you-can-eat buffet and all-you-can-drink either beer or wine, like a bar at the end. Mm-hmm. And you can stay all night. There's a dance and fireworks, and it's basically a whole weekend worth of, like, activities. There's a wine shakeout the next day where you go back to some wineries and to drink some more. I unfortunately couldn't go, but it's one of those races that it's so unique. I would highly recommend it to anyone.
Awesome. I wonder what a training program looks like for that race.
Good question. Mine was just like, go, like, make sure you can run 40K even when you're tired, just to make sure you can enjoy all the wine. Mm-hmm. You know, just like practice, just like go on long runs, but really no pace whatsoever. Mm. Because you definitely want to enjoy even the wine at the end of the race. You know, I guess another strategy would be to just DNF as fast as possible.
And just join the party.
Exactly. So
I remember when I met you, or like shortly after, you were facing a bit of an injury. I think it was a foot injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it goes back to how I went from running 5K a week to quickly after running 80 kilometers a week. There's an untold rule, or, you know, unofficial rule, that you shouldn't increase your week-to-week volume by more than 10%. And having picked up running too fast, no one told me about it until it was a little late. So I started having shin splints in both my legs, because I picked up running a little too fast. And it was a good reminder, like, you know, I should really, like, take a step back and just, like, make sure I gradually increase my training so that I don't get injured. And for many people who are listening to this podcast, I think, you know, when January comes around, we're all very motivated with new goals for the year to come. Especially with, like, something like the January battle or through the Lululemon 40-80 kilometer challenge. But what I think it's important for most people to remember is to gradually increase your volume. And if you know you want to approach your 2020 goals, you know, strong, start training for them in December and November. Don't wait until it actually starts, because you want to be gradual in how you increase it to avoid having to take a couple of weeks or a couple of months off to wait for it to get better. Personally, I was quite lucky because I also love cycling, so I could just replace a lot of my running through rides. And Montreal is incredible for that. And you don't realize how incredible it is until you're not in Montreal anymore. Mm-hmm. For me, it wasn't too hard to just, I could just replace running through other activities. It's something to remember. Like, it might feel great, but just like, you know, there's a, just take it easy. There's, you have your whole life to run. So mm-hmm.
It's a more of a slow process than a quick one for sure. And any other lessons that you've learned through running that could be helpful?
Not one in particular. I think life is running is a very humbling experience. And depending on if running had taught me anything, it's like the humbling aspect. So no matter how great you feel after a race, there's going to be someone who has probably done it faster and better than you. So, you know, just don't really race to be better than anyone. Just do it for yourself. Because if you're chasing those type of goals, you'll only ever feel regret that you could have done something even crazier. Because if you cross that finish line smiling and happy, even though you might be in pain, that is worth a lot more than whatever else. And, you know, and goes back to the idea of keeping it fun. And if anything, I think the running community and the fitness community in Montreal is incredibly diverse. And I think one of the things that was really lacking in my life when I was working, in consulting and in finance, was everyone around you is like a work overachiever who just wants to make the big bucks to buy a bigger house or a fancier car and go to like crazier hotels in some even fancier country. But it doesn't necessarily feel right, because you're always surrounded by these people, and it just pushes you to seek things that you don't actually necessarily want. Maybe some people out there do, but it wasn't who I wanted to be. But because you have nothing else to compare yourself to, it's hard. But running, because it's a humbling experience, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, when you look back to all these incredible athletes coming from Kenya and Ethiopia who barely have shoes and are incredible runners, like, it, you know, you don't really need much in a running. Like a pair of shoes, ideally, it helps. But, you know, that's all. Like, we're all the same on the road or on the trails. And you get to meet incredible people with very diverse backgrounds and experiences. And that just opens you up to like the world that you don't necessarily see, because we're all in our little bubbles, like with our colleagues and our friends. But there's all these other people you would otherwise never get to see or meet or talk to. But when you're running, like, hey, we're all the same. And so it doesn't matter what color skin you have or, you know, how bad or good your week was. We're in this together, and you can share and learn from each other. And if anything, that was to me one of the biggest and greatest takeaways. Mm-hmm. And my recommendation would be go out there and meet incredible people. Some of them are inspiring athletes, and they'll push you to achieve things you never thought you could do. But some of them are just like very wise individuals who will just, make you realize a lot more about life.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And I also like to kind of push people to just try, you know, just to come out and see what it's all about. And usually you'll find me sitting at the back of any run group just to kind of keep people company. And I'm not there to train, you know. Yeah. I'm there to
exactly, because if Justin was here to train, we would never catch up with him.
I'm there to socialize and have fun and maybe help somebody else along. What does running mean to you?
It's been that refocus in a way, that like sort of like pleasure aspect that my life needed before. And here in Montreal, it has become a bit like my little second family through all these different run groups, right? Like be it Run Right or WRG or Yamajo or Mile and Miles, and just even like the East Laurier crew, which I don't spend enough time with just because it's hard for me to train on Tuesday evenings because my Wednesday mornings are
a little early.
Exactly. But it's, it has become sort of my second family here. And it just, every run is, you know, either by myself when I want to train for a next race, where, you know, because you want to, you know, cross that finish line feeling great and being smiling, or when I train in a group, you know, and just basically spending time with family. It to me, that's, you know, it's just sort of like this this incredible pastime, who just like on which you can refocus everything else. You know, it, like your work becomes so much more compelling, and it's much more motivating to finish quickly if you know you want to go for a run that evening. It's, you spend an incredible Wednesday if you, you know, worked out really hard in the morning, and you know every time you have to, you know, walk to the next meeting room, and you're lifting, and you're taking up your laptop and just getting up your chair, and you're just feeling sore from the morning. You're like, yeah, that feels good. So that little extra feeling that, like, you know, makes you smile like in the corner of your face, just because you know about it, but you know, people around you don't necessarily know. And it's a place where you can really express yourself too, because again, humbling, running being a humbling experience. Like, we're all like, you know, just be yourself, because you can't fake it out there. When you're all sweaty and tired, like, it doesn't really matter who you pretend to be. Like, you are you. So
what's next for you, Laurent? Any crazy races coming up?
Well, per my strategy of signing up at the last minute, not yet. I'm going to be running the half marathon in Vegas in at the middle of this month. So with the November Project grand family. It's our yearly meeting of all 52 cities, and this year we picked Vegas. I don't know. We're expecting over 1,000 people to be there, and that workout at 6:29 on Saturday morning will be absolutely crazy. I can't wait to be there at the bounce, being surrounded by a huge crowd, and I know it's going to get loud. So that I'm very much looking forward to. And the race itself on the Vegas Strip. So, you know, 10 kilometers down, 10 kilometers up. Well, a tiny bit more probably, just to make it a half marathon. So, you know, right at sunset. So that's going to be really beautiful. And for 2020, still TBD. Probably Ottawa is like sort of in my radar. I didn't do it last year. So this year I'd love to go. And we'll see you for later in the year.
I want to ask you, like, at the last NP gathering, November Project gathering, Des Linden was there, no? To tell you, like, give you guys a speech about Boston Marathon and all this other stuff. Was there anything that stuck out to you that you could share with us?
It's funny because, like, you know, you see her on the pictures on Instagram, or, you know, or on the news when, you know, she crosses the finish line in Boston, you know, like, first, and it's incredible. But it's kind of funny to see her in person, because she is a very small person. Like, you see her, she has, you know, like, you know, she's probably 5'2", 5'3". She has, like, you know, very small legs that, you know, like, you wouldn't think, you know, that she would be an incredible runner. But yet when she goes, like, wow, she's an incredible athlete. So just like, again, not, you know, a bit like a book that you shouldn't judge by your cover. You cannot judge a runner by how they're built. She's a very good reminder of this. But also her story of, you know, of keeping training through hardship. You know, that's why, I mean, she's been to November Project in New York when she used to live there before she moved to Michigan, I think. You know, like, her idea of, like, you know, showing up to, like, keep showing up, and which sounds very, you know, very close to our November Project, just show up feeling. But this idea of, no matter how bad the weather is and no matter how hard it can be, you know, just, like, go do it. Like, go, like, you know, like, go to your workout, push through. Because she talks about how she, at her peak of her, what she thought was the peak of her career, she went, she was a part of the American Olympic team, two Olympics in a row, but unfortunately lost in Boston 2 seconds behind the winner in 2011. She was she was first, and in the last sprint, because you're giving out your 110%, she had just no energy to turn her head to see where the other person was. And in the last couple hundred meters, she got past and just finished 2 seconds behind. So, you know, for a normal person, finishing second in Boston would be an incredible achievement, but she's Des Linden. So she obviously wanted more. And but after that, she battled through injury, and it was a really tough time. But she kept this idea of, like, you know, keep showing up, keep doing it, keep pushing through. And in 2018, through the car wash that was Boston that year, with the wind and the cold, and I'm sure Justin can speak a lot to.
My favorite race experience.
Exactly. you know, where her training in, you know, the harsh North American winters was actually used to this hard weather, pouring rain, cold wind. And she pushed through and finally won in Boston. And, you know, 7 years after coming in second and taking that long to, you know, go back to the top, to be able to win a world major. And especially in, you know, as she says in her own words, like, Boston was always the goal. You know, if it had been New York or Chicago or in any one of these other majors, she would have been happy. But Boston had a little something. And so for that, she's incredibly grateful. Mm. And it's very, you know, just good to remember that, you know, it can take a long time to get back from an injury or a bad race or just like something where you're a bit disappointed. But keep it up, keep training, and you never know.
Well, thank you, Laurent, for showing up today to have this conversation. And thanks for showing up to the WRG Run Club on Monday and leading on Wednesdays at November Project, and also being part of Yamajo. You're a really big figure in the community, and you help a lot of people. And I think you've really helped to bring the run community together in your own way, and spreading that joy that you have and that it brings you. So for that, I really appreciate it, and thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Justin.
Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Movember, an organization leading the charge in improving men's health. It's a fact. Being more active makes us feel good. So this month, the Rundown is dedicating each kilometer we run to Movember. Join our crew at moteam.co/WRG and help us raise awareness for men's health. Whether it's for prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health, or suicide prevention, we all know someone or have been personally affected by at least one of these illnesses. Show your support by growing a mustache, raising funds, or simply by being more active with us. This Movember, let's get motivated and move together. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.